Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Well, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Glenn McFarlane and I'm joined by a man today who's on holidays, but he keeps giving, Michael Warner. G'day, Mick. How are you?
G'day, Macca. Thanks for having me. I'm not on holidays, mate. I'm doing homeschooling. And Daniel Andrews, I know you are a big listener of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. And I've just got one message for you, mate. And that is open the bloody schools, please. We need the schools back by term four. We're all struggling. I know it's difficult for you, mate, but just the one priority, look after the kids and forget footy crowds and all that. Just open the bloody schools, mate.
See, I thought I had visions of you out in the backyard, the banana lounge, you know, the cocktail in your hand, having a break because you've worked so hard and broken so many stories that you needed a break. And that's not the case.
No, I'm reminding myself of why I was one of the worst math students in the history of Peninsula School because my six-year-old boy, William's better at maths than I am. That's prep level. But we're all slogging through, and I know it's hard, but we just got to get these schools open, Macca. I know yours are adults, but it's tough times.
Yeah. I got a girl doing VCE and another one, another one in year eight. So
well, that's worse. That's worse.
It's been VCE. Yeah, it's been really tough. It's been really tough. So she's soldiering on. So we're hoping that that term four might be the way around it, but. The other thing that's going on at the moment is there's so much footy news. We just don't know where to look. And obviously just hot off the presses now is the three-week suspension for Toby Green for his knocking into Matt Stevic in last week's game. Are you comfortable with that penalty 3 weeks, Mick?
I think I am, but one side of my brain, and there's always a battle between the left and right-hand side of my brain, is that I wanted Toby to play because I really love him as a player. Scott Pendlebury said during the first half when he tweeted when he was kicking those three goals against Swans, is he the best player in the comp? He just about is sometimes when he's on. But then he's just got these brain fades that he puts himself in these stupid situations. He plays on the edge. You want players on the edge, but I think he crossed the line. I could see a case for it. It wasn't just, as some people said, the former players, Derek Humphrey-Smith was another distinguished former umpire who said he could see a way out for Toby with the fine, but it isn't the case and we're told he won't appeal. So that's it. Cactus for the Giants and Chris Scott will be the happiest man in the country.
Don't take it too easy, Cats. We saw that a few years ago in 2018 when they thought that Toby wouldn't play in a final. But just on that, I think the Giants have done the right thing here by not appealing. I'm really pleased that they've decided not to appeal. They couldn't appeal. This is one that I don't think they should. He lost comprehensively at the tribunal, the early morning tribunal that turned into an afternoon tribunal. All I want to say, Mick, is that it's, absolutely to my end, the right decision that he had to be penalised. I'm just wondering whether the Giants need to be a little bit harder with Toby. And everyone's talking about him being the captain of the Giants next year. Certainly he should from a footy sense, but he does so many stupid things that I'd hold fire on that for a year, I reckon.
Yeah, well, the Cornelio situation's fascinating in itself. Will he be there at the Giants? I've seen him linked to Fremantle. He's from Perth, isn't he? But I think he should be the captain. I know what you're saying. He's cost the team. Tony Shaw said on the weekend on 3RW how Phil Carman, they're still angry at Collingwood over him missing that grand final, which I'm sure you could remember. So he's hurt himself.
Don't remind me. I was a young kid at that game. Oh, no.
He's hurt his club. He's hurt his club more than himself, really, Toby. But, we had Richo on. We know when they banned boxing, and he was saying you want us to play on the edge and train as warriors and play like warriors. But, I'll give him some leeway. And I also want to give some leeway to people like Luke Hodge who've been attacked for a soft interview after the game. The process would play itself out. I don't think it matters what Luke Hodge asked him, whether it wasn't a tough question or not.
No, I agree with you there. That didn't concern me at all. We saw so many different versions of, you know, slow-mos and vision of that. It was a bit like the Zabruga film in the Kennedy assassination, wasn't it? We saw different visions here and there.
I don't think it was, actually. But
didn't you see about seven or eight different shots that as well?
Matt Stevich tried his best to give him some pretty good evidence, you know, saying that he didn't feel intimidated. And I told you about the precedent that I thought that they could rely on in a game in Noosa earlier in the year, which is overseen by the AFL Queensland, where a similar thing happened, but during the play, wasn't it, three-quarter time, where the play got off. So I thought there was a precedent there that they could rely on, but it seems as though they're going to go on. What about the poor old giant stuck at Barn Boogle, but you can't play golf? I mean, seriously.
My son's just discovered golf. He absolutely loves it, and he's doing it tough in lockdown because he can't get out there. Imagine actually being at Barn Boogle and not being able to do it.
Barn Boogle is one of the greatest places on earth to anyone who hasn't been there. And we went on our Peninsula Golf Club trip down to Barn Boogle in September a few years ago, and there was a group of about 25 of us, and on the other side of the I don't know if you've been to Barn Boogle. There's sort of a TAB right on the course.
I've been to the TAB on the course.
Oh, you have?
That shouldn't surprise you.
And the other 25 that was there was the Port Adelaide Football Club footy trip. So footy trips have changed a lot. They're on a golf trip, but it's a magnificent part of the world. But I think it's criminal to not let them play if you're down there in quarantine.
Have you basically given up on the Giants now with no Toby Green? And, you know, and you make the point about Noosa. That was an in-play incident. I think the thing that really hurt Toby here, that the game had paused and he made a beeline. Whether you thought it was aggressive or not, it was. And it does filter down to lower levels.
Yeah, I have given up on them. They were lucky to win, to be honest, against Sydney at shot after shot. Poor old Buddy missed that one as well. And it was they fell in against Collingwood in a prelim. That's being a bit harsh, but in 2019, and even the week before against Brisbane. But I can't see them beating Geelong, and so no. But a great effort from Leon Cameron, all the same, who everyone's been trying to kill off for years. But yeah, he's done another magnificent job. And we say it all the time: Giants are a great club, and for a test tube baby expansion club, I've got a lot of respect for them, and I've still got respect for Toby Green, but I don't know how he gets this stupidness out of his game.
Yeah, well, he's got to do it because it's really hurting his footy club now. And I made a mistake earlier. I said 2018 when Toby missed the Collingwood preliminary final. It was 2019. Those 2 years are seared into my memory for Collingwood finals losses. I think he has to get on top of this, Mick. For the sake of his footy club, he's done such a great he's played such a great role at that footy club. He's signed on for life. He wants to stay. He genuinely loves this footy club, and it's a part of him, but it's just a part of his game that he's got to get rid of. And I think the Giants have actually got to be a bit harder on him now. And you know, he'll be feeling as bad as anyone, but I think they've got to start, you know, really whacking him and saying, mate, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah, maybe you're right. But, you know, you play on the edge, Macca. You play on the edge, and sometimes you cross the line, but it's a real shame because I would have loved to. We always want to see the best players playing, but put a line through the Giants.
Yeah, and I can't say I ever played on the edge either, so that was probably my letdown as well. So, well, there's so many other things going on at the moment, Mick. What we'll do is we'll just take a break and we'll come back with Geelong and what a straight sets exit would mean for the Cats. Welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Obviously, the big loser of the first weekend of the finals was Geelong. What would a straight sets exit for the Cats mean for the in this particular instance, Mick?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen for a start. They tend to rebound pretty strongly, Geelong, and I cannot see GWS getting over the top of them. But regardless of whether they go out this week or in the prelim, I mean, if they win it, that's a different kettle of fish. I'm not going to completely rule them out because anything can happen. But if they were to crash out, I guess it would have to mean some sort of mini rebuild because it's hard to see them going back to the well The interesting thing for me, Macca, and it's not really an area of expertise for me, but you hear a lot of the football experts talking about the way that they play and does that defending with the ball philosophy stack up in the finals, you know, when it's the chaos ball and the pressure rises and the turnover becomes more costly. So that's fascinating. And that for Chris Scott and his record, and, you know, people are saying he's been linked to every other club. And, but if they were to crash out, it's a big if. Does he need to reassess the way that he thinks the game should be played?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think their list management, obviously, a straight sets exit. And I think we both concede that they will probably win this week. And you can turn things around. They've done it before. They've been able to turn things around after week one failures. But their list management structure worries me a little bit as well going forward. Don't you think that, you know, potentially at some stage, and I'd love to see them make some changes this week and potentially bring in some younger players like Big Asava and, you know, and try and, you know, bring something in like that.
Yeah, but it's worked for 20 years. I mean, they have not really had a, maybe they missed the eight once in the last 15 or something. You know, they're a brilliantly run club, although that's interesting that Brian Cook is out at the end of the year, maybe going to Carlton. Mac, we could talk about that a little later. But
yeah, I can't wait to talk about that.
Steve Hocking's taking over. There's some changes afoot. Fascinating time for Geelong, but they always seem to find a way to top up. Yeah. But you can't stay young forever, Macca.
No, and I've tried and I've failed on all counts in regard to that. where do you see, like, Chris Scott's legacy? Like, he comes in a decade ago, wins a flag, and has had them – you know, competing nearly every year, as you say. Like, if I'm a supporter, I want to be a Geelong supporter in a way, because you get great value for money, even as disappointing as some sort of finals are. And they got just unfortunately beaten by a team in a dynasty last year. So I'm not totally against what the Cats have done, even with their recruiting. But I think a bad failing this year would see them try and change that a little bit.
No, they're a phenomenal club. And he's got the highest win loss record ever, yep, hasn't he?
But it's in home and away history.
In home and away history. Well, there you go. But it's finals that matters. They did get those three premierships, so Geelong supporters are generally happy. But he's a polarizing guy, Chris Scott.
He is.
I always hang out for his post game press conferences to see which way he goes. The few things he stands for, like shorter game lengths and that really annoy me. But he'll be in the football industry for as long as he wants. I reckon, you know, maybe one day he could go and coach the Gold Coast Suns or somewhere like that.
Yeah, no, he certainly could. And, you know, he's got such great footy intel. Kane Corns was suggesting he's been whinging a little bit this year. I'm not sure about that. He's got strong opinions on the game, Chris. One thing I wanted to ask you, Mick, and it was a great line that Matthew Lloyd had in regard to Patrick Dangerfield. And we know that he's had a hand injury leading into the last week's game that happened in round 23. But Matthew Lloyd suggested that sometimes he wants to win a grand final so much that he actually puts maybe too much pressure on himself and he puts that Superman cape on. Is there anything in that, do you think?
Well, Lee Matthews said the same and he would know. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But he's got a broken hand. So when you saw him dropping those easy overhead marks on Friday night, was it? Can't remember. Saturday night?
Friday night. Yeah.
You're wondering what the hell was going on there. But if he's got a broken hand, then maybe he's got an excuse there. But I reckon Danger will bounce back this week. You always got to be careful, Macca, falling into that qualifying final loser, yeah, writing them all off, because they will.
We do it every year, don't we? We do it every year, and sometimes you look stupid in doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I definitely
think Geelong.
They are, because they've got so many players who. Sorry?
No, I was going to say, what do you think about Brian Cook going to Carlton? Let's talk about Carlton, because they fascinate me. What's going on there?
Well, isn't that interesting that Brian Cook, was there an initial suggestion that Collingwood might have been interested? You're all over all these things as well, but as it emerged that Carlton is the one that, we were told that Brian Cook was retiring. He's 65, but clearly there's a bit of petrol left in the tank.
Well, I saw that there was a report that Brian Cook was linked to Jeff Brown. That isn't right. I don't think Jeff's run into Cookie since they swam that mad rot nest swim with a lot of blokes in their 60s Cookie. And their speedos.
Yeah, Cookie does it every year.
Now, Cookie's not going to Collingwood, but what was really interesting to me was the way that Luke Sayers wasn't able to guarantee Kane Liddell or Brad Lloyd's jobs late last week. We had him on 3AW Friday night, and I sort of pushed him, can you guarantee Liddell? Because you hear that he won't be there. We've been hearing that Brian Cook had been of interest to Carlton. And that, look, it'd be a coup, but I've got to say that if you're Kane Liddell, you'd be pretty disgusted at the way that things are being handled. They're really in a mess, Carlton. If it's all well that ends well and you get a great coach and you get this, you know, maybe the end result is all that matters, but it's just been a bit unsavoury, I think, for the Carlton the way it's played out publicly and the leaking, which the president admitted himself. He said the leaking's disgusting. It's got to stop.
And I think you'll find that he addressed the staff internally and said this is something that's really affecting the club and you know, we cannot be having a club that leaks. It's been leaking, you know, like unbelievably in recent weeks and months, and we can understand that. But you can sort of understand why people are doing that. There's a lot of people in that football club worried about their future. You know, the CEO is one of them. You know, the footy boss is another. You know, there's been absolutely no loyalty shown. I mean, David Teague's a prime example of a bloke left out on a limb, treated appallingly. You might argue, and a lot of Carlton supporters have argued, that he's not the right man going forward. That's actually not the point. This board gave him a contract that's, you know, locked into 2022. All they needed to do was be upfront and honest. They weren't upfront and honest, and they left him out on a limb. He could have been told weeks ago.
When was the last time a coach got sacked and he didn't do a press conference? When are we going to hear from David Teague about what he's got to say about, you know, way he was treated, what his plans are, the review? Did Scott Waters do one when he left St Kilda? I think he did, actually. I just can't. When's Teague going to bob up?
No, it is. And I think you'll find that that'll happen at some stage in, you know, perhaps even in the coming weeks. I mean, you've got to be a little cautious if you're David, I would expect that he would get some calls from other clubs about potentially coming on as an assistant. I wonder whether, you know, the Richmond Football Club might look at someone like David Teague because we already know that Damien Hardwick has spoken to David through that period of time. And you know, David Teague certainly supported that. There was some suggestion that he might even do a press conference last week. It didn't happen. So I would think we'll hear something from David Teague in the coming weeks, whether that's a press conference by Zoom or things are a little bit more awkward now. But I really think that at some stage, I'd love to hear what David Teague has got to say. Like, he's been treated appallingly. And this footy club, Mick, I know that they've had the review, and the review was meant to build a better footy club. The instability there now is ridiculous. And as you say, I think it's the disunity at the footy club. You've already written a number of stories about a potential EGM. Is that still in the wind, do you think?
No, it's not just in the wind. They lodged the paperwork on Friday afternoon. There will be an election at Carlton. So that's sort of been lost in the wash. That'll probably happen by late October, according to the constitution, unless the club finds a way to push back against that. But then you've got Greg Williams, who suddenly emerged as the kingmaker as the football director. You've got the Ross Lyon scenario, which it's hard to get a read. You know, mid last week he was out. By Friday night he was $1.01, and then now there seems to be a little bit more doubt as well. There's talk that Clarkson's back in the frame. So like, that's why I say, if Luke Sayers is able to bring in, you know, Brian Cook and Alistair Clarkson and Neil Baum, well, it won't be Neil Baum because he's staying, but, you know, rearrange the things to that extent, then by pre-season all would be forgotten. But right now they're steaming.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you're right, like, does the ends justify the means? It's, you know, the age old talking point. I just think they've handled it appallingly. I'd be incredibly frustrated if I was a Carlton supporter. Do you give much credence to the Alistair Clarkson talk that you know, I think he's told us four or five times, even through his manager, James Henderson, that who was busy himself with the Jamie Carr sort of issue last week. Do you believe that Clarko could, at the last minute, put his hand up and coach the Carlton Football Club? Is there any hope of that, do you think?
Yes, I still haven't given up hope.
Wow.
It's a slim hope, but you'd have to say that until an appointment is made, they'd still be throwing. I mean, that statement bought some time, but it didn't sort of categorically say that he was out of the frame. What about your club, Collingwood, though? They've done a process. Good, you know, you'd have to question some of the things that the Collingwood board have been doing, but appointing that panel and going through a thorough process and landing on Craig McRae is actually a big tick.
Yeah, I think it is, Mick. I think it's a great tick for Collingwood. And I think it was, if you go back to, I was lucky enough, and you and I both were able to speak to, you know, Paul Le Courier at the start of this situation in June, way back in June, when we put the question to him about, you know, who's going to coach Collingwood. And he said, this is not about getting the biggest name. It's about getting the right fit. And I think Craig McRae is the right fit. And we know that he's going to get the job and will probably announce. There was some suggestion he was even at the Holden Centre today. So we think that announcement is imminent. He's got an amazingly good background, you know, in terms of developing players, but also, you know, assistant coaches in great systems as well. So actually, I think this is the first time, Mick, this is no exaggeration, the first time almost in the history of the Collingwood Football Club where they've actually done a lengthy and thorough process into the right coach. You go back to, you know, they pigeonholed Malthouse into the role, which was great. Nathan Buckley in a similar sort of vein. You know, you go back to Lee Matthews. They had him there as a, you know, he was going to be coming in for Bob Rowe. So this is a thorough process. And I think it's a bold move from Collingwood. But you know what they'll do? They're going to put a lot of really good people around him.
Like Justin Lepich. I've heard Eddie McGuire say, you know, long after he was shown the door, that they needed to go and get a big name because you need a big personality to coach Collingwood. But it's good that they actually haven't listened to that and they've gone and actually listened and identified who's the best person to coach the club. Now, as I said last week, he's a sort of softly spoken guy, Craig McRae. I didn't see him as a senior coach, but as Lee Matthew said, that it's changed a bit, which is why those Ed Langdon comments about Ross Lyon were quite interesting, you know, even though he said he was... They all sort of backtracked a million miles from it. But is that aggressive fire and brimstone sort of coach the dinosaur these days?
Yeah, I think you're right. The players today don't take feedback back the way they used to take it as well. So you need a bit of a gently approach, but you still need to be able to deliver a good spray. You know, I think, you know, Craig can certainly do that. He's been in some great systems. You know, Justin Lepich has said again on Tuesday that he helped Craig McRae and Adam Kingsley and also Michael Voss in their presentations, you know, organising the presentations for Collingwood. And he is very, very open to joining the club under the right circumstances. I think you'll find the Pies have had a conversation with Dale Tapping, Brisbane's midfield coach. He's worked at Collingwood, as we know, and is highly thought of there. He's got a decision to make because he's been offered a two-year deal at the Lions as well. So they're going to put a really, really good team around Craig McRae. I think the point was they didn't want just this one senior coach. They wanted a team of people around them.
Well, it's a massive loss for Peninsula School in the AGS, Macca, because Justin Lepich is the coach of the seniors there. And I think the school needs to push back and block that move because Peninsula Old Boys are a far more important club and Collingwood. The other interesting thing that Tony Shaw was saying on the weekend is he's hearing whispers that there might be some sort of, we might not need to go to the AGM on December 16th for Jeff Brown to get the votes take on the board, because there might be some sort of, the white flag might go up.
Well, there might be, we sort of chased this a little last week as well. There's certainly been talk of a peace settlement, and I think that'd be really good, wouldn't it? Some sort of peace settlement. It's really hard when egos are involved to try and reach situations like that. But for the club, I think it'd be great, because you look at earlier this year, Collingwood was a mess. It had so many issues with it. And whereas Carlton obviously were, you know, those issues were yet to arise at Carlton. But you look at Collingwood now, and if they can get this board scenario settled and get the right person running the club and the right people around them in terms of the senior coaching and the assistants, I think the future's looking bright for the Pies. It might take a few years, of course, but I just worry about the instability at Carlton. That's the one that sort of worries me. So let's hope there's some sort of peace settlement. I'm not sure exactly. You're across all these things, Mick. What's your feeling on a potential peace settlement at Collingwood?
Well, I don't think it'd be a peace settlement. I think it'd be a full-blown surrender, because I don't imagine that the tactics that the Collingwood board have used, you know, forcing a Supreme Court challenge because they're trying to, they won't hand over the register of members. There's a lot of bad blood there between the two factions. So I cannot see, for example, Mark Corder and Dick Brown serving on the same board. That's not going to happen. So the only way it'll be resolved before December 16 is if Corder reads the writing on the wall and resigns. But I don't think he's that sort of person.
No, we sort of looked into that last week, and it was denied on a number of different fronts. If we're talking about round one, 2022, who's the president of Collingwood, Mick?
Oh, Jeff Brown will win that election, in my opinion.
Interesting,
what do you think,
isn't it?
As a Collingwood man? Who are you going to vote for with your...
Now, see, the beauty of this being an impartial journalist is that, yeah, I'm a member of Collingwood, but I'm not a social club member. I used to be, and then I realised I... You know, in my role, I don't think it's good to support one side or another. You call it as you see it. So, but yeah, I think you might be right. You think I'm being soft here, hey?
Splinters McFarlane.
Yeah, that's where I used to play on the Pine. That was my position. That's not exactly true. Mick, there's so many great things to come. Let's, after the break, we'll go to a break here and we'll come back talking about the Western Bulldogs. Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Mick, can the Dogs, they've got to do it the hard way. Have the Dogs got a 2016-style raid on the finals like they had back then?
It doesn't have the same feel as 2016 to me. They also didn't have the benefit of that week off. They sort of got their players back in 2016, or if they can somehow advance. I can see them beating Brisbane. I thought Brisbane were pretty ordinary. Played in patches, but it was a good game for the Dogs. The Essendon threw absolutely everything at them, but I just don't. Is the Bontempelli injured? Can they really rely on Shaki, even though he was pretty good? It was a massive loss to lose with the big fella who did his ACL late in the season. What was his name?
Josh Bruce.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think so. But I'd love to see it, because I've got a lot of respect for Luke Beveridge.
Yeah, I'm a bit like you. I think Bevo, he's the sort of guy who can actually lift this team. He'll have some sort of weird and wonderful sort of theme that he'll have the team playing for. One thing that was pretty disturbing, I reckon, on the weekend, and we saw a bit of it, was the social media abuse that was headed in Cody Waitman's territory. I thought it was completely out of line, wasn't it? What was your view of that, Mick?
I think the Essendon electorate is very frustrated at the moment, because that was completely ridiculous. If you've got a gripe, it's with the umpires. Cody, he's a very good player, Macker. I know that he got his goals from free kicks, but he was able to finish. I've seen him take a couple of hangers. He's only a kid. He struggled in the hubs last year, but I reckon they've got an absolute ripper there, and I guess maybe he's one of the reasons you think that they can go deep, but I really think Melbourne and Port Adelaide are the two standout teams.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. Just on Cody Waitman, he just knows where the goals are, doesn't he? And really, you can't blame him for the injury, for the free kicks. The umpires are paying them, so I thought it was completely out of line, and you might be right about the Bombers. They're obviously, how many days are we now, Mick? Give me that little figure again.
I think it's 6,204 at the moment, but who's counting? Having said that, Macca, I don't know if you've seen the video that Essendon put up on their social media.
Outstanding.
Yeah, which showed the players coming into the rooms, and you know, we've all been there at any level you play at, but the way that Ben Rutten and Dyson Heppel spoke did suggest to me that the club has turned a corner, and that Essendon supporters do have their club back after, you know, a very messy, how many years has it been? It's almost been a decade since.
It's heading in that direction, isn't it?
But so I was really impressed with the way both of them spoke, and it seems to me that there's a genuine bond. They've got heaps of talent. Their midfield's elite. Their back line is very good. They'll sort out the forward line. So I think that 6,204 is in jeopardy.
Yeah, but I think it is.
But Mackie, you can add on 365.
Not that we're counting, but I think you're right. Like, I think in other years, and we've seen it's at 7 losing finals in a row. I remember back in the 80s when Sheeds took over, there was all that talk about eliminitis for Essendon, and they've sort of had that. But what they have got this time is, I reckon they've got a bit of hope. And, you know, in their other finals appearances, it's been a finals flogging, and then it's been, you know, another year or two outside the eight. So I think this time they are building. I still think they've got to fix this forward line scenario. That is the main key in terms of doing that. And we saw that again on the weekend. But, gee, I think they've got something there. And you're right. Those comments after the game, and I love the way that footy clubs now let us into the rooms and let us into some of the stories behind the stories. Because if you're an Essendon supporter and you watch that with Ben Rutten and Dyson Heppel, you'd be thinking, my footy club's in a pretty good space right now.
Yeah, not much good happens on Twitter, Macca, but that was no. That was good.
No, and we saw that again. Yeah, spot on. And not much good does. And there's plenty of good stuff there, but there's so much bad stuff. And we saw it again, you know, with Anthony McDonald, Tip and Woody copping some criticism as well. It's just, you just get exasperated by what actually happens, you know, in the sewer sometimes. And, you know, and good on Essendon for calling it out. And I think we need to call it out more. And people say, no, let's not talk about it. We have to talk about it. We need to stop it ASAP, don't we?
Totally. Maybe you just need a license to be on social media.
Yeah, I think.
Did you see in China they've banned computer games for kids for more than 3 hours a day?
Gee, my kids would be in trouble.
Yeah, I reckon that's not a bad rule.
You like the rule? I'm worried about your kids, and your kids are very young, so there's probably not a lot of computer games. But in lockdown, gee, sometimes you've got to do it, don't you? So,
yeah.
I didn't think you liked China at all, Mick. I thought that was not in your wheelhouse.
When did I ever say that?
I'm only having a lend to you. I'm only having a lend to you. But I'm not sure that would go down in the McFarlane household. The my son's 21, and him and his mates haven't been able to catch up with each other. But they have a little system, Mick, and I think this is not a bad idea. Where they I'm not encouraging alcohol here, but they'll buy 6 different individual beers and they'll drink through the beers and play some video games. So it keeps them out of trouble.
Very good. Very good.
Now you talked a bit about the two teams that you think, you know, were the most impressive in the finals, first week of the finals. And clearly to me, the team that stood out was Melbourne. They are on track, and this is their best chance, clearly, since 1964, isn't it?
Oh, they're magnificent. I just love Oliver's football. He's just, now that he can be damaging by foot, he's a phenomenal player. Petrarca has been a gun all year, and he's got that ability to kick goals. And then there's Max Gawn. As I said before, I reckon Gawn, Petrarca and Oliver are just about the first three you'd pick in a midfield. In the competition, they got that massive back line with May and Lever and Salem. The forward line's still a little bit away. And the other thing I would say, because I reckon it's a race in two, I know we get it, you can have a bit of bias after the qualifying finals, and last year both the losers of those qualifying finals went into the grand final, didn't they? But it just seems a bit different this year. I wonder whether the way Charlie Cameron got off the chain and really was their only avenue to goal, Brisbane, Port Adelaide, if they can get through, have got a really dangerous small forwards in Gray and Rosie and Fantasia and Zach Butters and Motlop. So that might be something that Melbourne would be. Oh, I saw Matty Lloyd saying, yeah, maybe they need to get Hibbert into the team. Mm. So is that their Achilles heel? But geez, they're on a mission, and it'll be good to see them win it. But I think that Port can't be discounted.
No, and it'd be a great grand final between those two, wouldn't it? I think if it does go there, you make a great point about Clayton Oliver. He is, to me at the moment, the most damaging player in the competition. There's no Dustin Martin playing at the moment, but to me that's the way he is. You know what I really love too? I, you know me, I'm an old sentimentalist, and You know, to see Bailey Fritsch doing so well for Melbourne in that number 31 jumper, it almost seems like, you know, the great jumper that Ron Barassi made famous at Geelong, and he's obviously, his dad wore it beforehand. It sort of brings a, you know, it just gets, you get a little bit emotional seeing that, because Bailey Fritsch is doing a good job. But it is quite amazing, Mick, to think, when you think of those guys that are outside of the Melbourne team at the moment, you know, no Nathan Jones, who, you know, has now got a decision to make about whether he stays in the, you know, within the group or comes home for the birth of his twins, and, you know, no Jake Melksham and no Michael Hibbert. Can you see a change? Do you reckon you can see that change there?
I can see Hibbert, definitely. Yeah. You'd want to get
not
that
Jones.
Play. No, absolutely no chance. But I reckon one thing interests me is who's going to present the cup to Melbourne if how do you get into Perth? Because I'd love to see, you know, the Reverend Neil Danaher or Barras or someone.
Yeah.
That and that's the tragedy of this in a football sense. The fact that there won't be a heaving MCC on grand final day to see the Demons if they're able to break the drought. I was lucky enough to be in the members on the day Geelong broke their premiership duck in that 118-point demolition of Port Adelaide when Jimmy Bartel boasted the ball didn't actually touch the ground that day. and the day that the Swans broke their duck, and of course when the Tigers broke theirs, and it's
and the Western Bulldogs as well. Been lucky. We've been so lucky in recent years, haven't we? Where we've had, you know, there's certain teams that I never thought would win a flag. I wasn't sure that the Bulldogs would win a flag in my lifetime. But and the Swans the same. It's been pretty amazing. But Melbourne would be. You're right. It's they need to think, and I'm sure they are thinking about this. The AFL now about what's going to happen with that, the handing over of the Premiership Cup, if Melbourne happen to actually get it, because you're right, the Reverend Neil Danaher would be outstanding. Ron Barassi just epitomises not just Melbourne, but, you know, footy in general. So they won't be there, but whether there's some sort of audio-visual way we can actually trick it up and do it in a different sort of way.
Yeah, Port Adelaide's Charlie Dixon's not really in great form. Is he? So, and as good as those small forwards are, you do need a couple of big guys. So yeah. Melbourne have got the edge, but Macca, anything can happen. 1999 preliminary final.
Yes.
Is a cautionary tale for everyone.
Definitely. You're right. And Charlie Dixon, as you say, like Matthew Lloyd, who's one of the most astute guys in the game, I reckon. I love listening to him pointing out the fact that Charlie's been going for these one-handed marks. But just one thing, Mick, I didn't know whether you saw the, you know, I'm sure you would have seen it. I don't know whether you took too much out of it, but the Orazio Fantasia interview after the game where he talked about he'll absolutely play whenever he wants to play, but he was subbed out of the game. Do you think there's a few clubs out there, as sore as he was and the like, that are using this Medi sub, you know, for reasons other than we had intended?
Oh, Macca, please. The Medi sub is a farce. It came in at 12:05 at the start of the year. Probably been exploited 15 to 20 times. And I don't think anyone actually cares. But it'd be good to next year actually say you've got a spare man, you can activate him anytime you want, if that's what they want to do. But, you know, Fantasia did have a busted nose he did look a bit. He has been carrying an injury. And if to rest him, it could be the other way. He said he heard a click or something. I mean, it'd be devastating for them to lose him. But if you're in a grand final and there's 10 minutes to go and you're 2 goals down or you're 2 goals up, whatever, is if you're not going to activate a fresh player. That was interesting. The Bulldogs, with their medical sub, they had Shacky came in and Johannesson. You see that? And so you can even sort of move your medical sub around prior to the game. But Ducks and Drakes, it'll be a tactic, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly. And Mick, just as we finalise and finish this, obviously the announcement is pending on the grand final and what it actually. So, what does that mean? What do you think will happen? Obviously, the grand final is going to be played in Perth. We know that everyone's in quarantine already. You know, either heading there or the like. What's it mean for Melbourne going forward with the grand final? Will we get an extra year out of it? Not that you and I will be around when this contract runs out.
Well, hopefully we will be around. Is it 2058? Are you planning on not being around then?
I'm just doing the numbers. What's that, 37 years?
I hope you're around.
Put it this way, I might not be going to the MCG then.
Could we still be doing the Herald Sun footy podcast in 2058?
Well, we'll be out of lockdown then, do you reckon?
Bloody hope so. What does it mean? It just doesn't mean anything. They'll tack a year on at the end, but it's been a farce that they're pretending that 2 weeks ago, a week ago, that we could still play a game in Melbourne. You can't look up at the sunset at Rye. You can't go to the park. Come on, Macca. It's going to Perth.
It's going to Perth. We know that. So hopefully, all we can hope is that 2022 looks a little bit different. Melbourne might be going for back-to-back flags at that particular time. But, Mick, you've been an absolute delight as always. You're on leave. You're an absolute star. I reckon you're heading back to the backyard for the banana lounge and the cocktail, and I'm sure you'll be looking forward to the day ahead.
I'm homeschooling and looking after the dinner, you know, doing the right thing.
A man of many talents. Thanks again for joining us, Mick.
See you, Macca.
Cheers.